Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the question-and-answer session, please press star 1 on your touch-tone phone. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. Now I will turn the meeting over to Ms. Katie Kata. Ma'am, you may begin.
Thank you, Pat. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to EMC's Investor Relations Tech Talk series, and thank you for joining us today. As many of you know, these Tech Talk conversations are part of a long-standing series that we have hosted. The purpose of these conversations is to provide you with a deeper dive into EMC's markets, businesses, and technologies in a timely and efficient manner. We hope that you find these discussions useful and welcome any feedback you might have about how we can improve these discussions or any topics that you would like to cover. Today's topic is one I think that's been pretty hot lately. Today we're going to dig deeper into EMC and virtualized environments. This is a topic that we opened the discussion on back in October. Once again, we have Chad Sakich here with us. Chad is EMC Vice President in charge of the VMware Technology Alliance, and today he will go into what is required as customers pass through each phase on the road to a private cloud architecture and what exactly it is that EMC brings to the table that others do not. Just like last time, Chad will take us through his prepared remarks, and then we will open up the lines for your questions. Before we get started, it is December 15th, and we are well into the last month of a quarter, but as always, I will remind you that no issues relating to the tone of business or the recently concluded, the quarter today will be discussed on the call. And finally, information concerning factors that could cause our results to differ from any that we may talk about on the call today can be found in our filings with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. With that, I will hand the call over to Chad. Chad?
Thanks very much, Katie, and thanks, everybody. I appreciate a little bit of time here in the tail end of the year, at the end of the quarter, and in the holiday season. So I'll try and make it exciting and interesting. It's good to have an ongoing dialogue with you. If you want to continue the dialogue, you can ping me. You can find me on Twitter. You can read the blog. I try to be as public and as transparent as I can, the exceptions Katie talked about notwithstanding, of course. So, there's a little more in the forward-looking statements kind of comments that I have to put in front of the slide deck. But today what we're going to be talking about is expanding on the idea that we talked about last time, that we're seeing that our customers are at varying points on this journey, ranging from virtualizing the things that are IT production, in other words, they don't carry SLAs, virtualizing the things that matter, things that carry specific SLAs around performance or availability or security, and also deploying their own internal private clouds, exploring public cloud options to deliver more of an IT-as-a-service model. You know, just like any visual representation, they're never perfect. You know, customers sometimes come into this journey at the last step, but for the most part, it holds pretty true. So the other thing that holds true for the most part is that most customers are pretty well right smack dab there on the journey. In other words, they've exited virtualizing their stuff that is non-mission critical. If you talk to customers, whether they have tens, hundreds or thousands, and in some cases tens of thousands of virtual machines, the number isn't a reflection of their degree of maturity in this model. It's more a reflection of just their size as an enterprise. So, you know, whenever I travel into New York and we're meeting with the big financials, you talk to the IT departments of those enterprises, and they have thousands of VMs. The same holds true of many, many large enterprises. But if you ask them, what have you virtualized? They talk about test and dev. They talk about things that are IT production. They talk about things that don't carry specific SLAs. And literally, that's what the last 5 years have been about. It's been about how do you support that as best as possible, and that's been the early phase of VMware's massive growth and how everybody's been dragged along that journey with them. So I wanted to, you know, pose these in, like, Socratic question format, right? A common question I get is, okay, if you're in that phase, and frankly, if you're in subsequent phases too, you know, some argue that blank has better integration than EMC does with VMware. This is a question that literally I've gotten from almost everybody that I can think of, and it's rooted in the fact that everyone, us included, is trying to demonstrate that they're the best choice for customers if they virtualize, because everybody's virtualizing. So let's talk about this a little bit. In the first phase, purely from a storage standpoint, we'll put aside backup recovery, those sorts of things, there are a relatively common set of requirements that we kind of hear over and over again from our customers. They want things to be as simple as possible. They want block and NAS. They want unification. They want multi-protocol. They want iSCSI and Fiber and FCOE and NFS and SIFS and all that sort of stuff. They want it to be deeply VMware integrated. They want virtual provisioning. They want all that sort of stuff. And they want to leverage things like solid state and SATA. They want to be able to have huge caches that they can use with VDI, all of those sorts of things, along with other efficiency stuff like dedupe and compression. So, you know, literally you could change the picture of the array in the middle. Those are very often the requirements that come in inbound when the customer is virtualizing those things that are in that IT production phase. And if I, you know, I've tried to be as fair as I can, admittedly I'm a little bit biased, but really if you take a look at it, out of all of the platforms that exist there on the market, if the requirement is that I need to have a single pane of glass that I use to manage block and NAS storage, and I can support anywhere, any protocol under the sun, it's really EMC and one other company in that space, which is NetApp. If you take a look at it, you talk about VMware integration. I'll give you a little more detail on this. Everybody has varying degrees of VMware integration. EMC has got more than anyone, and I'll demonstrate that. Virtual provisioning, the idea of being able to not just do thin provisioning, but be able to non-disruptively change anything, be able to change a file system, a LUN, the brains of an array, anything like that, being able to change anything on the fly non-disruptively. Again, there's some, and EMC is certainly in that category. The same thing goes with very high availability and self-serviceability. When it comes to flash and SATA, pretty well every storage vendor has now kind of come around to what we started 2 years ago. We were very early saying, look, there's going to come a time not too far in the future where it's just going to be solid state and slow magnetic media. Whether it's SATA or SAS, everybody's going to have to go this direction. There's not going to be much room for stuff in the middle. So bit by bit, you know, some of the storage vendors has embraced that, but, you know, we're seeing everybody kind of come around to that view. And there's an interesting, you know, kind of corollary that comes with that. Everybody argues against certain things, but certain things are just intrinsically inevitable, and that's one of them. The other idea is there were huge debates, and there still are, about should you use flash technology as a huge cache on the server, on the storage array, somewhere in the middle. Is it going to come in the form of a Fusion I.O. card? Is it going to be cache, or should it be a tier? And the answer is it's going to be all of those things. So anytime you bring a new technology onto the market where it delivers huge performance gains at lower power at the same cost as the thing became before it, people are going to find all sorts of uses for it. One use is a very low-cost extension of system cache. And in mid-range land, really there's only two primary vendors that do this. Again, it's us and NetApp. Sun has got some interesting things, or Oracle has got some interesting things in that area. But, you know, that's certainly one use. And what's the benefit of that if you're a customer? The answer is that across SQL, Oracle, and other use cases, you can basically get about 2 to 3 times more performance for the same dollar. Or put another way, you can get the same performance for roughly half to a third of the cost. Now, in certain use cases, it can be even bigger than that. So, for example, if you're talking about virtualized clients, virtualized desktops, where there's a lot of commonality, this can be a huge cost-saving factor. Now, some vendors, alternatively, think that flash and solid state and slow magnetic media are going to auto-tier. We're in that category as well. So, you know, again, if you take a look at it, some workloads don't fit very well in that cache model. So this efficiency technology, in some cases, whereas one over here, one over there, only EMC today is covering all of those things like a big Venn diagram. Deduplication, whether it's in line for backup. Inline dedupe is a prerequisite if you want to be a backup player today. And EMC's got industry-leading technologies now in the modern data domain, but also primary storage deduplication, which we'll talk about in a little more detail. Compression, really there's one other player that does primary storage compression, and spin down, there's a small number of players there as well. So, you know, there's all of these things, everybody's, you know, stepping over each other. Some of these features are about VMware integration. Some of them are what I call VMware affinity. In other words, efficiency. The more efficient you can be, the more interesting your infrastructure is in a VMware context. One thing that I think is a story that we could probably do better telling to the market is our primary storage dedupe. So literally, this is a quote from a customer, Maple Leaf Foods, who recently purchased a vMAX and an EMC unified platform. They're using both for their virtualization environment. And their comment here was that they're using this to consolidate the file service, and they're using it as a primary NAS platform as well. And their comment was, for one of many network shares, just by turning on the dedupe, primary storage dedupe capability, they reduced their primary storage requirements by 40% on top of being thin. They reduced the number of files. Their backups went from 94 hours down to 10 hours. That's a huge improvement, and as you can see, they're pretty darn excited about it. So this is a capability that we provide for free on our EMC Unified platform, and something that I think we talk a lot about our backup dedupe capabilities because they're fantastic, but we don't talk enough about our primary storage dedupe capabilities, which are there, available GA. They've been in the product now for some time and are provided free as part of the platform. So all of those things together get lumped into simplicity and efficiency. You know, if you think about the things on the left, they were all about being simple, and the things on the right were all about being efficient. But the most important thing in the VMware context in that first phase of the journey, and in the second and the third, is VMware integration. So the places where a storage vendor can integrate, no matter who you are, map into this picture. And again, you know, I don't want to make this I'm totally a nerd, so this is very exciting to me, but I want to make it too propeller-heady. The pictures here is that the blue stuff is stuff that's part of the VMware stack or the operating system stack. So ESX host, vCenter, and VMs, those sorts of things. And the orange here is the array itself. So you can see the array plugs in the ESX host either via block, fiber, FCOE, and iSCSI, or NAS. So what can vendors do? They can build plugins into vCenter that enable people to self-provision, for the most part. Provision, see end-to-end visibility, do neat stuff that the array can do. You can also integrate your array directly into vCenter, and I'll show you what I mean by that. You can build multipathing plugins for ESX. To date, EMC has been the only one to do that with PowerPath VE, although recently Dell Equilogic produced one for their own array. That product is doing better than even our most optimistic expectations, and it highlights how important this VMware affinity is. It's something that makes multipathing simple, easy. You get better performance, better simplicity of the whole environment, and there's loads and loads of customer quotes that you can read on the EMC communities where you can read their customers' comments in their own words. The next thing that you can do is you can leverage this API, which is a mouthful. It's a vStorage API for Data Protection, VADP. But the long and the short of it is that API allows you to achieve for backup what is the holy grail, which is the ability to back up a virtual machine but be able to catalog the contents so that you can restore files within the virtual machine without needing to restore the virtual machine and then drag them out and those sorts of things. So that API allows you to do something that every customer wants to do. And then there's the APIs for Site Recovery Manager. There's this new stuff called VAAI, which is really, really important. It stands for the vStorage APIs for Array Integration. This is where the array hardware assists things that the ESX host would do. Now, what's the value to a customer? The value is that they can deploy hundreds more VMs onto the same sort of device. They can do common VM provisioning tasks 10 times faster with less CPU impact on the array and on the ESX host. This has now become like an ante. You know, every storage vendor must do this to be able to compete in the space. And then looking further out in the future, there's going to be more of these hardware assists. some for NAS, because today all those assists are just for block, as well as cooperative development that we do with VMware around some stuff that's core in their kernel. Now, likewise, again, I tend to generally want to stay on the, well, what are we doing? But I'm always getting questions of, what are you doing relative to the other guys? So none of the other primary storage vendors have done any deep integration with the vSTORAGE API for data protection. The companies that have are companies like Symantec and Veeam, in other words, backup vendors. But EMC isn't just a storage vendor. We're an information infrastructure company. So we've built this into Avamar. We've built this into Replication Manager. So whether the customer wants to do array-based snapshots or whether they want to do a full-blown backup solution, we can give them that holy grail of VM-level backup with no agents inside Geth, but single-step file restore. Amongst the primary storage vendors, many of them have been developing plugins. We actually GA'd today the fourth version of our plugin, which does more than anyone else. Again, this is something that we provide for free to the customers as a benefit of using EMC and VMware Storage together. When it comes to Site Recovery Manager, I'll give you another example. Literally, just today, we updated our Site Recovery Manager as VMware's DR tool. It simplifies backup disaster recovery significantly, and we see loads and loads of customers using this around the globe. In fact, it's one of VMware's most successful products outside their core ESX and vCenter suite. And EMC's got the broadest coverage for this, has always had the broadest coverage for this, but it's actually extended beyond what you can do with it natively. So, for example, we've simplified the process of failback. We've simplified the process of end-to-end visibility, and today we've released the next version of our integration there with Site Recovery Manager, which once again leapfrogs everybody else. To date, we're the only vendor that I know of that has actually integrated our array itself up into vCenter, and I'll show you what that means and what it looks like. When it comes to the plugins for multipathing, like I said, Dell just, so it shouldn't say none, it should say one. Dell Equalogic has this, where they're leveraging Equalogic scale-out characteristics, and to do that, they need to develop a multipathing plugin. So EMC supports the free, natively available capability. We automate its setup. We do that more and better than anyone, but if customers want even more, the ability to add PowerPath Virtual Edition into the VMware kernel itself is of great value to our customers. And the other thing that has GA'd today is our support for hardware assists on the vMAX. So we were one of the first storage vendors to do it at the mid-range on our EMC Unified platforms, but we were also now the first vendor to support it at the high end and the low end. So this basically is something that is included. It doesn't require the customer to even do anything. It just significantly accelerates tasks they're doing inside VMware. Again, this is one of those APIs that over time you should expect everybody to support. But being able to support it from the smallest of the small to the biggest of the big, and to be able to support in our mainstream code releases is something that is unique and highlights that we're focused on execution. So when it comes to NFS offloads, those don't exist today, but they'll exist in future vSphere releases, and you can imagine that there's probably one other storage vendor who will have NFS offloads very much like EMC will have on our unified platform. So I wanted to do something cool with no net. So this will be an interesting thing to see how this works. but I thought, you know, it's easy for someone to make crazy claims in a PowerPoint with no backing. And I know that probably no one on the phone has 13 ESX hosts in the basement of their house like I do, or plays in the lab and in the environment all the time. So I'm not going to make this about what buttons you click to do stuff, but to highlight the customer value of the things that we were talking about. So as an example, this is a real environment where this is home for a VMware admin. This is vCenter. So I'm actually remoted into one of my team's labs. This one here is in London. And you can see there's a bunch of hosts and there's a bunch of VMs and there's all that sort of stuff. Normally, when you click on an individual host, And if you were just using anybody's generic storage, and you clicked on this storage button, you'd see all this stuff like this. And when you click on it, it would say, hey, look, this is a place where I'm storing VMs. But it doesn't actually tell you anything about where is it, how does it live, where is it configured, any of those sorts of things. So if anything ever goes wrong, the VMware admin doesn't speak the natural language of the storage team. And likewise, the storage team doesn't speak the natural language of the VMware team. So what we've done, and this is the latest version of this this plugin, is there's the EMC Virtual Storage Integrator. When you click on that tab, it provides, so this is not included in vSphere by default. It's something we provide that extends the UI directly that makes life simple and easy for the VMware administrator. Because now if they click on that data store, right, which is the same data store that I clicked on before, they can say, hey, I see that that device is actually running on that Clarion. And it's actually this device, and it's this thing, and it's configured using this RAID protocol. And is it thin? Is it not thin? Is it properly multipath? Am I using PowerPath VE, or am I just using native multipathing? How's it set up? They can find all sorts of interesting information about that and now can communicate in the natural lingua franca to the storage team. In other words, it gives them end-to-end visibility. They can see all sorts of other stuff, like are they following best practices? So, for example, here's all of these individual devices. They can see are you properly connected across all of the array ports? Are you currently using all the paths? Are there any errors on the paths? All that sort of stuff. And it'll even automatically set up the array and the ESX host to best practices. So that's really cool. The other thing is that this gives them end-to-end visibility, free, included, if they're lucky enough to be using VMware and EMC together. But on top of that, we've gone a step further where they can go in and they can actually do provisioning. So if I click on the unified storage and say I want to provision something, this means that the VMware admin is able to go in and provision either block or NAS via this simple UI without talking to anybody. And this is one thing that is becoming increasingly true as customers go on that journey towards clouds. There's these silos of storage team and networking team and server team and VMware team are collapsing. So increasingly, when things are really fluid and elastic, you need to have less people doing more. This is something that allows you to do that because now the VMware team can provision themselves, and I'm actually provisioning here on an underlying storage array within pools that the storage team defines for them. So, again, it's not even going into the UI of the storage array or anything like that. It's basically showing them in a view that's very natural for them. So, for example, if I say, okay, I'm going to take this auto-tiering pool, and this auto-tiering pool I'm going to grab and I'm going to provision some storage out of that. We'll give it a name, so I'll call it IR Data Store. And in here, I'm going to throw in some VMs. Okay, great. We'll give it a name. We can give it some LUN numbers. We'll give it a size. So we'll pick 1 terabyte. Notice how if you stick in a size that is wrong, it'll even give you a nice little error. So that error was flashing based on its total capacity. I've increased it beyond its maximum, so it says, hey, you can't do that. And then notice that they can even leverage all of those advanced array capabilities that we talked about around efficiency, like, for example, auto-tiering. Do you want to do auto-tiering? Do you want to make this the highest tier, the lowest tier, all that sort of stuff? So all the stuff that you're hearing about from EMC about our storage platforms, you can see is tightly integrated and tightly coupled with VMware. So dramatically simplifies everything. And I don't want to spend too much more time on this because literally we could show you boatloads, but hopefully what you guys saw is it is very, very, very simple. So it's not just sophisticated, it's extremely simple. Now, many storage vendors have got plugins that look and feel something like that. Now, if we have enough time and perhaps it's for another tech talk one day, we can show you all the things that we can do. We can snapshot VMs on our NAS platforms. We can import them into Vue and Xen and all sorts of cool stuff. But the thing that I wanted to show you is how we do the other half of the equation as well. So just very briefly, this is home for a customer that's using an EMC Unified Storage Array. This is Unisphere. It's a fast, simple, easy-to-use UI that allows people to provision block NAS replication. We've now gone further than anyone else in the industry at a single pane of glass for all of our mid-range capabilities. So if we go and we take a look at a particular array, this is stuff, it's expressing it in ways that storage admins, you know, see the world. How's the cache configured? Where are the storage processors? How's that all using? But take a look at this. If you click on this virtualization button right there in the GUI, the EMC Unified Storage Platform does something that no one else does, which it goes out and automatically connects to vCenter. This is a vCenter instance. And as ESX hosts are added, they're automatically discovered by the storage array. So deep in the bowels of VMware, we've integrated so that they'll automatically connect to an EMC storage array and say, hi, I'm an ESX host. And then when you click on it, notice that it shows you the virtual machines. The reason that this is important is as you move to cloud, the idea of LUNs or file systems or hosts needs to disappear in the background. Because you're never provisioning that. You're provisioning and supporting the application, which is a virtual machine object. So the VM is the object of granularity of the data center of the future. And if you take a look, that means that the storage arrays and networks and servers all need to start to become aware of VM objects. Look at this. This is an Avamar virtual machine, and the storage admin can say, hey, here's its IP address, here's its operating system, and if they wanted to, they could even find out exactly what storage that individual virtual machine is currently using. So if you go and you take a look at all of these individual properties, you can find out all sorts of things about how that VM is being used, how it's actually affected by any sort of performance problems, all those sorts of things. And just to be clear, this is something that our customers are telling us that they want, that it's extremely differentiated. I had a quote from a partner yesterday on Twitter basically saying that Unisphere and its VMware integration is selling mid-range storage arrays. So, this is a capability that to date is unique, to be able to provide this level of visibility from the storage admin up and from the VMware admin on down. Pretty cool stuff. And this is just the tip of the iceberg. So, with all that said and done, if anybody wants to stick around afterwards and drive Unisphere and vCenter, you're more than welcome. But let's pop back to the discussion at hand. So if everything was around the IT production phase, the question that this is what I'm seeing today. If the you are here mark is here and people are increasing the number of virtual machines underneath that curve there, what's starting to occur now is we're starting to see customers start to deploy more and more mission-critical apps. Now, this is not a question of are you virtualizing SQL Server, because there's craplication flavors of SQL Server. There's SQL Servers under desk. The question is, are you virtualizing things that carry business SLAs? That's the defining element of things there in the second phase. And as they do, their core requirements start to change. So if in the first time, in the first column, their requirements are fundamentally simplicity, efficiency, in other words, no cost. They want it to be deeply VMware integrated, just like I showed you, and they want it to be unified. You can see why this is an area where NetApp and EMC battle it out furiously, because this is the sweet spot that both of us cover, and, of course, I would, having drunk the EMC Kool-Aid, think that we do it better than anyone else, but we battle it out in the market in that segment. As you move into the business production category, you move into requirements that are SLA-centric. Now, you still need to be efficient, so things like mega caches and auto-tiering and compression and deduplication and all those sorts of things all matter. And they still want all of that VMware integration that I showed you, but it's SLA-centric. And if you look at it, this requires someone who's in the information infrastructure business to be able to cover both of these segments. So here we traditionally compete with HDS, we compete with IBM, we compete with other players as well. But all of the things that I showed you earlier about deep VMware integration, self-service provisioning, we can do that, and we can actually do more. So in other words, we can carve it off, and since these are hugely consolidated systems, it requires more kind of segregation of duties between VMware admins and storage admins while still letting the VMware admins do their thing. So what are the differences that I personally see between phase one and phase two? So think of it as, you know, the cropplication phase versus the applications that carry SLAs. It's important to remember that what they were virtualizing or still are virtualizing in phase one is in essence something that prior to being a VM was a one-use server with local disk in it, with probably one, maybe two network interfaces. So the performance requirements were, can you be better than that? Conversely, as you go into phase two, the performance requirements are, I need the same SLA for my Oracle environment that I had when it was a physical. In fact, I ideally want it to be even better, or my SAP landscape, or whatever. Likewise, when it comes to availability, are you better than a server and its internal local disk? When you move into phase two, you need to have availability characteristics that are the same as it was when it was a physical. And you can see that pattern all the way on down. In backup, for example, a lot of the times customers didn't back up test and dev, and they didn't back up IT production, in other words, utility-type servers. So in other words, if you virtualize that and you say, hey, I'm just going to take a snapshot of that once a day or once an hour on the array with VMware integration, they're like, hey, that's fantastic. But if you're going to be virtualizing applications that carry SLAs that say you need to retain for 7 years with a grandfather, father, son, you better have enterprise-style backup that still can deliver long retention, all of that stuff, but does deep VMware integration, like we mentioned, and also can do inline dedupe. Inline dedupe is mandatory if you want to play in that space. When the discussion is around security, basically it's a non-existent discussion in phase one. In phase two, it's something that's front and center. You need to be able to pass every audit, and the same thing goes for mobility. Interestingly enough, more and more every day, our customers are telling us that they want to have active data centers, the ability to move workloads from one place to another. It was a huge blog post that I wrote last week, and we held a webcast on it this morning that had 400 people on it. It's a topic that people are very interested in, and a lot of emerging technology like EMC VPlex is all about that. So the next question that I often get is, okay, the NAS versus SAN, the great protocol debate, as I call it. The thing that's interesting is I co-presented this with some colleagues of mine across the storage industry, including a colleague of mine from NetApp. The point gets argued that one protocol is intrinsically better than another for a given use case. And that's usually carried by someone who is a protocol passionista. They have a strong bias towards one protocol or another. One thing that was interesting that my NetApp colleague presented was this is their own data from September that shows protocol attached for customers who are using VMware. And you can see that there's a distribution where roughly 60% of them are using some block protocol and 40% are using some NAS protocol with 10% using more than one. I ran a survey myself at the same time across a broad set of customers, EMC customers and non-EMC customers, and this is the curve that I got. This was roughly 125 customers. And you can see that there's a, Fiber and iSCSI skew, and then there's the next closest is NFS, and then DAS and FCOE, trail up the rear. It's obviously a relatively new thing for FCOE. But the other thing that was interesting was amongst this survey group, and every survey group always has sample bias. So this sample bias is people who read blogs for information, so IT administrator types, technical types. You can see that 60% of them, in essence, 50% of them use more than one protocol, actually just about 60%. So more and more customers are realizing that it's not about one or the other, block versus NAS. It's do NAS and then pick the right block for you. So if you're a customer that never had existing SAN infrastructure, that's where iSCSI dominates. If you're a customer who has an existing fiber infrastructure that you're not refreshing, you use fiber. If you're a customer who has an existing fiber network and you're refreshing, everybody wants to go towards converged networking. So support for converged networking is very, very important. So the other thing that I wanted to point out that's an interesting fact is about a month after I did this, so this was second week of October at VMworld in Copenhagen, I was doing the panel on storage. So this is a moment where I'm not asking as an EMC-er. I'm basically there representing a storage expert in the community of virtualization. And I asked boatloads of questions, and we did a survey right there in the room. And one of the questions, because this debate always rages furiously, was what protocol do you use? And here you can see the distribution that looks like this. So the thing that is interesting to me is, you know, what's the root of that common question that we get often from analysts and people in the financial community? And the reason for that is that the dynamic in the largest of enterprises is that they have very established SAN environments, enterprise SAN environments, very established enterprise NAS environments. They've been doing it for a really long time. And usually one vendor gets selected for one vendor gets selected for another, and that's the brand that exists within that particular customer. And that storage vendor represents, in essence, a pure play. Even though outside that, you know, the island of Manhattan and certain huge enterprises, and in London and around the globe, each one of those vendors is, in effect, a multi-protocol vendor. We sell block, we sell NAS, we sell object, we use it all. The dynamic was that those customers were adopting virtualization very early and deployed boatloads of crap applications. As they deployed more and more of them, at the early days, they had to use a SAN. But over time, they started to realize, hey, these crap applications don't have these SLA requirements to put them on the SAN. We can put them on the Tier 2 or Tier 3 infrastructure. Likewise, as they're now virtualizing mission-critical applications, they're saying, does the application SLA change as I virtualize it? And the answer invariably is no. One thing that remains a challenge, not just in virtualization environments, but in application environments on NAS in general, is that getting towards the extremely high availability that customers associate with their SAN infrastructure, whether it's IP attached, Ethernet attached, fiber attached, FCOE attached, doesn't matter, is that extremely, extremely low latency, extremely fast failover behavior, extremely predictable failover characteristics is something that remains a very difficult problem for everybody in the NAS space. And that means I would argue vehemently against anyone who argues that the world is a block world or that the world is a NAS world. Both of those continue out for a very, very, very long time. So one interesting question that we do get is how will NAS and more broadly NAS and storage requirements change over time in virtualized contexts? And sometimes it's related to this question, which is, hey, I'm hearing that there's virtual machine sprawl and people are creating multiple instances of apps and they're building their private cloud where they can self-provision and management creates a problem. Hey, is this going to drive more data growth? Is it going to be a problem that needs to be resolved? And the answer is it's absolutely causing data growth. Every piece of technology that we can deploy from compression, dedupe, auto-tiering, mega caches like our fast cache, all of those, basically all they do is slow down that huge data growth curve and contain it. But the other thing that's interesting is that sprawl is a problem for our customers, not necessarily for the reasons that people think. So, again, this is a survey that I did on the blog, and you can see it being a blog survey, some of the questions are phrased in ways that are blog-like. But the things that are interesting is that, again, this is about 125 samples around the globe, that dealing with the cost of storage remains a pain point for our customers. As you can see, that lots of, you know, it's either a source of frustration occasionally, constantly, or it makes me want to poke my own eyes out. But the thing that's fascinating is that it highlights that figuring out how much they're going to use, in other words, their future rate of consumption, is a big challenge. And it's because still today, most customers buy infrastructure in, you know, three-year kind of cycles. And they deploy it, and they're trying to figure out, hey, I need to buy now what will sustain me through a given period of time, where the amount of growth I'm going to have is not necessarily predictable. And you can see, for example, another pain point is figuring out relationships between VMs and storage. I showed you earlier on, literally showed you, how we provide that for free in the platforms today and through integration with vCenter. So if that's the context, what's happening next that I'm seeing is that customers are starting to deploy their private clouds, which moves them into the IT as a service category. But if you take a look, whereas the other ones are kind of staticky, the IT as a service workloads tend to be a lot more variable. In other words, on a given day, they might create hundreds of VMs or thousands of VMs. I'll give you the ultimate expression of this. The ultimate expression is that at VMworld, they created and destroyed 140,000 virtual machines to support 5,000 hands-on labs in 4 days. So that's tens of thousands of VMs on a day being created, destroyed, reclaimed, redeployed, and that was just there to support people as they went through the hands-on lab exercise. That was supported by EMC unified storage platforms at Verizon, at Terramark, and in San Francisco. So, you know, it was deployed in the cloud. That degree of elasticity is a really difficult problem, and that requires, you'll notice that, you know, whereas the business production VMs are large, typically the IT as a service VMs are small, and so there's, if you're only going to be going after the same sort of SLAs as IT production, for example, there they deployed on NAS using Fastcache to absorb those big bursts. The other thing I'm seeing is that even though people move through those phases of the journey, it's not like their growth stops. So the relative percentage of VMs that are, you know, test and dev or IT production or business production stay constant, but the number increases. So there's this constant growth of virtual machines. And the larger the enterprise, the more profound that concern about will what I get now support me for my 3-year cycle? And if you're a service provider, that concern is very, very acute. And that's why that in the future, the primary things that people are looking for, particularly if they're large, is they're looking for scale-out or federated models for storage underneath each one of these pillars. Now, you'll notice that, you know, the requirements are still simple and easy and unified in the first corner, you know, in IT production, and it's SLA-centric in the second one. But the core architectural requirement to be able to scale out, like a VMAX does, and then be able to federate, in other words, be able to move workloads non-destructively from one to the other and scale out horizontally, which we've also GA'd today, the ability to do federated live migration between VMAXs, and the ability to have scale-out NAS models, both for IT production and for IT as a service, increasingly becomes a requirement. And if you have that in the back of your mind, and you're wondering how does that fit into the stuff that EMC has been doing, all of those VMs are in essence just compute. We talked about the storage that supports the compute, but they have to compute against something. They compute against big data. They compute against stuff that requires giant scale-out NAS models, giant object storage models, and are supported by those underlying platforms that we support. So, kind of wrapping up here, a few things to remember. The last time that we had our last Tech Talk was, I believe, in October. And I said, here are 5 amazing things that we're working on between EMC and VMware. Shared storage policy, bolt-on versus purpose built-for-purpose using virtual appliance constructs. And you might recall that I mentioned on that call that every platform that we develop today is developed first and foremost as a virtual storage device. And then we decided it doesn't make sense to go to market with it that way. I said we need to mature VMware and scale out NAS models. We need to do large-scale, long-distance geodispersion or federation of workloads. And we need to make object storage act more like transactional storage. The thing I'd call out is, you know, if you think that what's happened between October and what's happened here in December, you can see that this slide isn't, you know, just Chad's checklist. This is what's driving all of our thinking, our R&D and our M&A. Our M&A in this space is thinking about how do we continue to be the best choice in the virtualized context that we can possibly be. And that's why we are number one in storage for virtualization and why we're going to continue to do that. And before we move off of my, you know, rant and tirade here, I just want to thank everybody and say peace, prosperity, and private clouds for you in the new year. Thank you very much for the time.
Well, thank you very much, Chad, for your kind wishes for the new year and for taking us through all of that. We have about 10 minutes left, so what I will do is go ahead and open the line up for questions. So I'll turn the call over to our operator, Pat, and she'll begin polling for questions.
Yes, thank you. At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your touch-tone phone. To withdraw your request, press star 2. Again, please press star 1 to ask a question. One moment, please. And our first question comes from Brian Marshall with Gleacher & Company.
Great. Thanks, Katie and Chad. Chad, if you look at new servers that are shipped today, you know, roughly 30% or so, I think, are virtual, or is kind of the industry statistic that most are quoting. You know, do you have a similar statistic for, you know, what percent of arrays are actually being shipped in virtual environments today?
So we do actually have a pretty good metric of that. So while I'm obviously very passionate about the technology, as the person responsible for VMware's alliance relationship and our business relationship, obviously one metric that Joe and Pat and everybody measures against me is how are we doing in the virtualized context, right? And as part of that, whenever we sell something, the sales teams need to say, is this for a virtualized context, yes or no, right? What that's suggesting is that roughly it's almost the exact same ratio. So we're just a little bit north of 30% of our storage that's shipping today is shipping into an environment where the sales rep says that its primary use is for a VMware use case. So it's probably, and I can't say exactly how much more than that because obviously sometimes it's being sold for many use cases, but just north of about 35% of our storage revenues, the rep has said, yeah, this is a VMware drag situation.
Okay, and final question. If you look at VBlock, you know, we're hearing some pretty positive things about customers and their desire to purchase VBlocks today, 0, 1, or 2. You know, can you talk about, you know, what the pros and cons are, you know, if you buy a virtualized, you know, array from EMC standalone relative to that configuration within a VBlock? I mean, is there any kind of bells and whistles that, you know, from a standalone basis that you guys might provide?
So this is that's a great question. So literally, there was a guy who has a blog called Blue Shift, and he asked me that question, and I gave him a huge long dissertation. If you want to put yourself right to sleep, Google it. Blue Shift VBlock Chad Sakach. You'll find it. The interesting thing is, and this is going to be an area where I'm going to stick my foot right in my mouth. You ironically get slightly less bells and whistles in a VBlock than you would if you got it standalone. So what's interesting about that is, like, if you pause and you think about it, that's a weird. So what do I mean by that? A VBlock's core value proposition is that it is a product, right? It ships off of manufacturing lines in Cork and in Milford, and it arrives on the premise as a unit where it's pre-integrated, even to the point where VMware can be installed on the blades, right?
Mm-hmm.
What that means is that it needs to be revved every time that we rev something. So, for example, today, if you ordered a VMAX, you could get it with Ingenuity 5875 today, right? And it would arrive in a week. You know, you'd get it, and you'd be off into the races. But you couldn't get a VBlock with Ingenuity 5875 yet. That won't happen for a short little while because they need to integrate it and then update the standard build that comes off of manufacturing. And the big debate that goes on between the mix and match model of IT as it stands today, Open Systems IT today, versus the product, integrated infrastructure product category, is how much value beyond the vendors really pushing those things on customers are they getting out of it, or would they rather have it arrive, in essence, as a pre-integrated commodity product?
Mm-hmm.
There's business value in the latter. There's technology buyer value in the former.
That's great. Right. Very helpful, Chad. Yeah, thank you very much for your time. Appreciate it.
No problem. One thing I'll add, Brian, just, you know, offline, I'm sorry that you dropped off there, but the interesting thing is we're seeing more and more customers are kind of realizing, I love the fact that your stuff is best of breed, but frankly, if you deliver to me as an integrated product, that makes me even happier, because my biggest challenge in moving on the journey is getting my own stuff stuck together and glued together.
Understood. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Kaushik Roy with Wedbush.
Thank you. So, Chad, as IT is moving to the cloud and companies like Amazon, Microsoft, Google are building their own using third-party hardware, does it put downward pressure on monolithic storage such as EMC?
The answer to that is yes, but not in ways that you would expect. I'll make the following black and white statement, Kaushik, which is, thank goodness EMC has many aspects to its business, right? And it's not just on the storage side where there's this commoditization of assets on an ongoing basis, right? Same thing applies on networking. Same thing applies on everything. The thing that we provide that's of value, right, is continued development of innovation inside the stack, but we also totally embrace the scale-out on commodity non-quote-unquote monolithic storage models. So if you take a look at it, we could have deluded ourselves into thinking that we could compete with Exadata, with something that looked like an array, right? But the GreenPlum appliance internally isn't constructed like that. It's basically servers with DAS, right? Likewise, the design model of things like S3 or Rackspace's, you know, object storage models are servers with DAS in them, and that's the same model of an Atmos. Trying to construct it in any other model doesn't make either technological or economic sense, right? So I think, you know, what you should be looking at from EMC is saying, what are you guys doing so that you can play simultaneously in the traditional SAN NAS models as well as the emergent scale-out SAN and NAS models, because those are going to continue to have value in a bunch of use cases. But then what are you doing to go and say, I'm going to embrace and extend the DAS in server, you know, thing that's not going to stop?
And you mentioned VBlock. NetApp recently came up with their own VCN alliance, the FlexPod. Can you give us some color, like compare contrast the VBlock with the FlexPod, where you are better or not? So
You bet. So the core question is, if you ask NetApp, I'd like a FlexPod, but I'd like to change this to that. I'd like to change the ratio of blades or storage, or I'd like this new feature. Their answer is always going to be yes. That's why it's a FlexPod, right? If you conversely ask that question from VBlock, interestingly enough, sometimes the answer is going to be no, that's no longer a VBlock. And that highlights the fundamental difference between the two models. A FlexPod is, in essence, a document that says, if you buy this Cisco server and this NetApp storage infrastructure and any variant thereof, we've got a document that shows how you put them together, right? We traditionally would have called that a reference architecture, right? A VBlock, conversely, and by the way, you could do that with VMware, Cisco, and EMC. You could use any combination of any one of our technologies. You'd look up where they are in the matrix, and we even have reference architectures to go, here's how you put them together. When customers are looking for integrated infrastructure, whether it's an HP matrix, NHP pod, you know, the Cloudburst stuff from IBM, or a VBlock, what they're looking for is a product. They don't want to go to the store with a recipe and bake a cake. They want to buy a cake. And that's the fundamental difference between a FlexPod and a VBlock. There's more to it than that that's technological. So, for example, for them, they'd say, how do you want to orchestrate that? Because the biggest thing in these cloud models, frankly, isn't the storage, the networking, or the server. It's the orchestration and workflow. Once again, if you look at the FlexPod stuff, their comment is you could use it with anybody. Anytime the answer is you could do it with anything, that means it's not a product. Right? In the VBlox use case, the answer is very clear. You use Unified Infrastructure Manager.
All right. Thank you.
Sure. You know,
no,
I think we have time for only about one more question.
Yes, thank you. Jason Noland with Robert Baird. Your line is open.
Okay, thanks. Thanks for doing this, Katie and Chad.
My pleasure.
Just a two-parter, I guess, to clarify. When does server virtualization become a private cloud? Is it use of vMotion? Is it vBlock? Is it strict SLAs? Maybe some color there.
The defining ingredient for me is that when you have self-service automation and orchestration, when someone can provision something internally or externally without needing to talk to anybody in IT.
Nice and simple, Chad. I like that. Last question for me, and we heard the discussion of attach to virtualization and you know, you're arguing that FC SAN is seeing a fairly high rate of attach. So, help us rectify why NAS seems to be growing at a faster clip than FC SAN.
So the answer is that the volume of stuff that is in the NAS space, just the volume of stuff, right, test and dev, all of those sorts of things, is a larger set of information than the stuff that requires the specific characteristics of block, right? Now, the question of volume versus importance is two different things. So obviously, customers are willing to pay much, much more for Oracle than they are for SQL Server, right? So there's obviously some things where customers place higher dollar value on other parameters other than it's a database or it's a storage device. And I have to say, the growth of NAS is a fantastic thing. So as more and more customers realize you can use NAS for things other than straight-up unstructured data, you can use it for Oracle, you can use it for VMware, you can use it for many other uses, in the same way that now they're starting to realize, hey, there's this new class of thing, which is object storage, so I'm going to use S3, I'm going to use Atmos or whatever. Those basically all grow at differing rates. Once again, I'd say thank goodness that we've got an extremely strong NAS portfolio, not just in the, you know, classic NAS use cases, but obviously expanding that to make sure that we cover all of our bases.
So do you expect NAS to continue to outpace the FC and iSCSI SAN?
The actual revenue growth in iSCSI is, as a percentage of revenue growth over time, at least from the data I'm seeing, is still the highest. But it's coming from a much smaller base.
Okay.
Right? So what's interesting about that is that's just saying there's boatloads of customers who are deploying shared storage for the first time. Right? Basically, I think what you can expect to see is you can expect to see customers continue to deploy more and more on block, continue to deploy faster even than that on NAS. So NAS growth is going to continue to grow very fast for years. At the same time, there'll be an over time erosion of some of the classic unstructured NAS use cases by object storage models.
And DAS eventually heads south to zero.
And what you end up with is you'll end up with a growing category of loads and loads of DAS that looks like DAS in the sense that it's a disk in a server, but it's being transformed by software into giant object storage or giant giant NAS, scale-out NAS models.
Sure.
I mean, what's Isilon except for a server with disk in it?
Right.
And for that matter, what's a VMAX except for a server with disk in it?
Thanks for the time, guys.
No problem. My pleasure.
Sure thing. Well, I think that concludes our Tech Talk for today. So thank you, everybody, for dialing in, and we look forward to speaking with you at our next Tech Talk or at our quarterly earnings call. Bye-bye.
And happy holidays, everybody. Thanks again from me personally and Katie. By the way, I'll send out a couple of links if people want to take a look at them afterwards.
Sounds great.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you for participating on today's conference call. You may disconnect at this time.